Thankfully, the vast majority of people appreciate, understand, and obey the rule of law that we all live under. The minority who don't will at some point face some sort of consequences. Even when that debt is paid, there are instances where the paroled are supervised, depending on what their criminal acts were. This past week, the New Jersey State Supreme Court upheld a lower court ruling which would add an element of supervision for paroled sex offenders. Here with his analysis of this ruling is Seton Hall University law professor John Kip Cornwell. Thanks for being here today, Professor.
Happy to be here.
And for Seton Hall University is shu.edu. So give us the foundation. What was being proposed and what was being argued against regarding additional supervision for sex offenders?
Right. So as part of the conditions of parole for this group, they're required to submit to a polygraph, and the polygraph is purportedly for therapeutic purposes, meaning that it's designed to help law enforcement, parole, treatment providers to understand whether or not the individual is complying with the terms of his parole, whether he's showing an interest in certain victims, helps them with the victimology, helps them determine if the person is actually complying with the terms of the release, and informs the need for any adjustment in the therapeutic program that they're following to help them manage, I guess, their sex offending. Now, because it's a requirement, they were arguing that this violated their Fifth Amendment right against self-incrimination. It violated their right to privacy. Those were their major arguments, that they should have Miranda rights, have the right to counsel present, and things like that. All of those arguments were struck down by the appellate court and then also by the state Supreme Court on the theory that those really pertain to a traditional arrest, and the way these are conducted are not similar to that. Moreover, the answers that an offender gives cannot lead to criminal prosecution.
Yeah, the ruling basically says the polygraph alone can't be the basis of anything.
Correct.
But does it, much like if a detective came upon the initial crime scene, does any warning created by a polygraph test then enable law enforcement or the parole board to look further into a situation if the polygraph does create the concern? And does that put the Fifth or Sixth Amendment rights under any precarious position because of that next step?
Well, you're right. So that is, I think, a bit of the nub of the issue, right, which is that while it can't lead to criminal charges, as you've said in and of itself, if in the polygraph they learn of any new victims or any new crimes, and they have to turn that information over to law enforcement, which can use it for investigative purposes, which down the road could lead to further charges against the individual. So I think that they're pushing it, honestly, Chris, about as far to the line as they can, because I think that if they were to use this information to file criminal charges, I think it would be awfully hard to argue that the Miranda protections would not kick in. But because they technically don't, then they're saying Miranda's not implicated. Plus, the other important piece here is the state Supreme Court required that they get explicit notice of this fact. So if they get a question and the response to which might lead to further criminal investigation, the individual has the right to assert his right to remain silent. He doesn't have to answer that question. That was not going to be a violation of the requirement to participate in the polygraph to say, I don't want to answer that question. And they have to explicitly understand that. That's what the state Supreme Court has clarified. So I think all of those things have made the self-incrimination guarantee less obvious, less paramount here than it otherwise would be.
Professor John Kip Cornwell, Seton Hall University Law Professor, shu.edu is Seton Hall's website, and you are listening to Issues and Ideas. And just for the numbers for you listening, currently there are 7,469 offenders who are being monitored by the state that could be subject to a polygraph test, to give you an idea what the numbers we're talking about here. And there's already a program in place, GPS systems for sex offenders.
Right.
Does the lie detector policy align itself more with that, or are there significant differences from that to the other?
That's a great question. To me, they are very similar in terms of Those programs have to do predominantly with public safety, and although this is said that this while the polygraphs are purportedly predominantly for therapeutic use, there's no question, Chris, that these things also relate to public safety because they want to make sure that the person's desires, impulses aren't going to unexpectedly lead to victimization that was not anticipated by the release. So these are conditions, restrictions, if you will, put on parole that are specifically targeted at sex offenders because of the particular danger they present to the public at large.
So then, from this point moving forward, since this is a court-approved policy, then a judge, when issuing a sentence, can make, at that point, the polygraph test part of the parole. But what does that do now for those who are already in the system? Is there a grandfather clause that would absolve them from this?
No, to my knowledge, there isn't. And so they revisit when they're, the conditions of parole, the only reason they couldn't go ahead and impose this is they could argue that it constituted an ex post facto problem, right, that it would impose punishment after the fact. But I think because these are viewed as effectively civil in nature, they're designed, they're not criminal punishment, they're more civil restrictions, then I would expect this is going to be pretty broadly imposed, absent, as you say, some kind of grandfather clause, which I don't believe is present in this in the relevant statutes here.
And I was looking through the ruling, too, unless I missed it, because some of these do get cumbersome at some point. If a sex offender refuses the polygraph test, is that parallel to a suspected drunk driver refusing breathalyzer? Is there going to be penalties for that?
Yes, so that if you refuse to comply with that, it's a third-degree crime in the state. But again, it does not make you subject to that penalty if you assert your right to remain silent in response to a question during the polygraph, which might expose you to criminal investigation. So that's the balance that they've struck. So, but yes, if you were ordered to submit to the polygraph and you said, nope, not going to do it, then that would be a third-degree crime.
And with the idea, too, of constitutional member rights, and we hear defense attorneys always say that there's no right that's absolute, and there's precedent where the right to gun ownership can be taken away if you're a convicted of domestic violence, for example. Criminals lose the right to vote.
Right.
So when an argument is made against a sex offender and their rights of the self-incrimination or right to counsel, mm-hmm. There is, I guess, would the right word be precedent, where, again, not everywhere is absolute based upon the act that you commit.
I think that that's right. And the other aspect of this case, the other argument that was raised, was a violation of the constitutional right to privacy, which we all enjoy. But again, the nature of someone's past and their past record of offending is going to introduce reasonable restrictions on the right to privacy, and the court viewed this as have other courts as sort of falling within the ambit of a reasonable restriction on the right to privacy, because you have to balance the right to privacy of the individual against the societal interest at stake. And if we're talking about sex offending, that's a pretty weighty interest on the side of the state.
And should just close this out, too, by saying that this wasn't an idea that was quick on the draw. This, as far as I was able to see, was an idea that was initially brought up way back in 2012.
Right, absolutely. And then the statute's been moved around, modified, the regulations have been updated. This has been sort of a conversation back and forth, if you will, between the legislature and the courts, which is technically the way it's supposed to be, so they can work together to get it right.
And as the conclusion of everything, too, even the defense attorneys, once everything was said and done, the state Supreme Court issued the ruling with the caveats and the precautions, even the defense on this side were happy with the results.
Yes, they were, exactly. They were particularly happy with the clarification that their clients would have to be told that they had the right to remain silent, since that they said they could assert a valid right to remain silent, and that was very ambiguous, and they were concerned that they would think that they wouldn't understand what that meant. Now they're going to be clearly told exactly what that means, and that they have the absolute right to remain silent if they might be subject to criminal investigation. investigation by their answers.
And that's the story of polygraph tests for paroled sex offenders. We've been joined by Seton Hall University Law Professor John Kip Cornwell, SHU.edu for Seton Hall University, as you do your college shopping that time of year. Professor Cornwell, thanks for being here today.
Thank you so much, Chris. Good talking to you.